Last month, the Supreme Court's ruling on Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission created a firestorm of controversy across the political spectrum and was even addressed by President Obama in his State of the Union speech.
With all due deference to separation of powers, last week the Supreme Court reversed a century of law that I believe will open the floodgates for special interests, including foreign corporations, to spend without limit in our elections.
In his dissent, Justice John Paul Stevens said the majority had committed a grave error in treating corporate speech the same as that of human beings. So we thought for this backstory segment that we would take a look at the Citizens United ruling and also at the idea that corporations might have the same rights as people. We are joined now by Doug Kendall, the president and founder of the Constitutional Accountability Center, a liberal law center, and by Richard Briffault, a professor at Columbia Law School. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And Doug, for disclosure purposes, didn't your organization file a brief in this particular case?
Yeah, we filed an amicus brief on behalf of Constitutional Accountability Center and the League of Women Voters on the side of the federal government.
So you're supporting with the siding with the FEC and Justice Stevens on this?
Right. So supporting the campaign finance law.
Richard, for our listeners who are unfamiliar with the details of this case, could you just give us a sense of the basics? What was Hillary the movie, and why did it become so controversial?
Well, sure. Hillary the movie was, as the name implies, a movie that was put together by a conservative organization, which was extremely critical of Hillary Clinton. It stopped just short of directly attacking her election, but was clearly in every way designed to block, aim to persuade people to vote against her. The question that came up was, it was produced by an entity which was technically a corporation, and was received some of its money from business corporations. And there is a very old federal law, the law is 63 years old, which, with certain exceptions, prohibits corporations from engaging in what's called independent expenditures, that is, spending money directly in support of or in opposition to candidates of federal office. And about half the states had similar laws for state elections. When the Supreme Court first heard the case, there were a number of technical questions about whether this kind of movie, which is really meant to be shown as a video on demand on television, whether technically a video on demand should be considered part of a broadcast or whether it should be treated more like a book. That was one narrow way the case could have been resolved. The second narrow way the case could have been resolved would to say that the ban on corporate spending shouldn't apply to ideological corporations like Citizens United. Instead, the Supreme Court decided to had the case argued twice in order to get out this deeper question, this more wide-ranging question of whether the general ban on corporate spending in elections was unconstitutional, even if by business corporations. And the court, by a 5-4 vote, said yes, that the ban was totally unconstitutional, not just the application in the Hillary the movie context or to ideological corporations, but to everybody.
We just played President Obama's thoughts on the court's ruling, and he went so far as to say that this is also a matter of concern because foreign corporations will be treated as American citizens, in effect. If he didn't get very specific as to explain how that might work, but should that be a concern?
Well, there's some language in the opinion suggesting that foreign corporations might get different treatment. The tricky thing is figuring out what's a foreign corporation. It's one thing to say a corporation that's incorporated in China or Germany or Great Britain, but it's another thing to say that there are many corporations that are incorporated in the United States but have a significant number of foreign shareholders. So even thinking about what a foreign corporation is a tricky thing in a world of a global economy.
So what do you think the ruling means for the rights of corporations and unions who are also covered by the decision?
Well, as you're right to point out, that it also frees up unions. I mean, it was the same statute that kept both of them out. Well, it means that they do have the right to engage in unlimited spending in federal elections. I mean, people are trying to figure out, will they do that? How many will do it? How much money will it be? Some people have pointed out the existing ban had a number of escape hatches and loopholes, so that some corporations were already spending money, but in a more sort of disguised or less direct way. You know, we'll find out what happens. So certainly in some of the states in which the corporate spending was allowed, the corporations were big participants in state elections.
Doug, many liberals have criticized the ruling, claiming it gives corporations the same speech rights as people. Isn't that an issue the court has wrestled with for a long, long time?
It is. The court has had to wrestle from the very beginning of the Republic with the idea of how to treat corporations when we set up the Constitution for we the people. Yet we've always had corporations that help generate economic growth in this country, and there's always disputes involving corporations. And the general rule throughout the 200-some years of the American Republic has been that corporations are protected by the Constitution, but also because of the special privileges we give them and because of their special characteristics, they are treated differently and subject to greater regulation. And, you know, what's happened at a couple times in our constitutional history, once when we had a very conservative Supreme Court in the late 1800s, early 20th century, and now again with this ruling, is the court has introduced the idea that corporations are the same as individuals and get the exact same protections, which is a quite remarkable idea. And I think Justice Stevens in dissent kind of points out all the ways that corporations are different and this history of treating them differently and giving the government more power to regulate them because of their special characteristics and their special privileges. And that, to a certain extent, went out the window with the Citizens United rule.
But doesn't the left gain something as well because unions are included in the decision?
Well, I think that even the unions have, for the most part, come out against this opinion because they know that the corporate treasuries are so much more vast than their own. Just to give an example of this, in 2008, ExxonMobil generated $45 billion in profits. During that same year, we had a presidential election where the two presidential candidates raised and spent around $1.5 billion. So Exxon could have devoted 2% of its profits that year to the electoral campaign and an independent expenditure and outspent both major party candidates. Now, will they do that? I think Richard is, raised an issue, a question of how quickly they will adapt to this, how they will respond to this ruling. But in theory, President Obama is certainly right that this could lead to the overwhelming of the electoral system by corporations and other special interests.
Richard, in his minority opinion, Justice Stevens conceded that the court has long since held that corporations are covered by the First Amendment. So is the question here just a matter of degree?
Well, I mean, I think the tricky part is recognizing that so many entities take the corporate form that you can't say that all corporations that all corporations can't claim the First Amendment. Obviously, there are media corporations. There was the very famous libel case of New York Times versus Sullivan. New York Times was a corporation. So there's a recognition that it's appropriate for some rights, constitutional rights, to be applied to corporations. The corporate property is protected by the takings clause. The question is trying to figure out, recognizing the speech interest at stake, also recognizing the questions of wealth and concentrated power and legal benefits that corporations receive. How do we balance those out? And I think what's striking about the court's opinion is its determination that this was purely a matter for the courts to decide, that there was no deference to long-standing public policies of limiting the corporate role in elections, the laws of 24 states and the federal law for 60 years, and that there was no balancing of the speech interest as against the concerns about enormous amounts of wealth and power. I mean, the old law did provide opportunities for corporate participation that didn't directly address candidates or corporations creating political action committees, which allowed corporate officers and shareholders to get together and make contributions and to use the corporate, corporation to help organize shareholders to put their individual monies in. So corporations were not completely out of the old process. The question was really a matter of balancing these issues of political participation and corporate wealth. And Congress had set one balance, and the court said, no, we don't like your balance. We're going to go all one way.
Well, Elliot Spitzer was on our show yesterday, and I asked him about the ruling, and he he supported it. He said that we should. What's the difference between Rachel Maddow offering an opinion and General Electric offering an opinion?
And that has been a dilemma as to how to figure out what the role, how to distinguish corporations from media in the corporate form. And I think that is something where the laws did provide exemptions for the media, for media editorializing and media news reporting. But certainly with the changing nature of media, that did become more complicated. And maybe one argument for the opinion is it sort of helps, it sort of sidesteps this very difficult issue of figuring out if we're going to limit corporations generally, how do we provide room for media that take the corporate form to participate?
We're talking about corporate personhood in the wake of Citizens United versus the FEC ruling with Richard Befault of Columbia Law School and Doug Kendall of the Constitutional Accountability Center. Doug, you mentioned late 19th century Supreme Court ruling. That's 1886. I'm assuming you're talking about Santa Clara versus Southern Pacific Railroad Company. How did the rights of corporations get tied up with the 14th Amendment's protections in that ruling?
It's really quite an extraordinary story because the way the idea that corporations were persons within the meaning of the 14th Amendment got introduced in the law is that a court reporter who formerly worked for a railroad took notes of what the Chief Justice of the United States said before oral argument, where he said, "We think that corporations are persons within the meaning of the 14th Amendment." And he took that down and put it in the beginning of the opinion, which is something that is just never done, not appropriate. And that's how the idea that corporations were persons first got introduced into our law. And now subsequent opinions have cited the Santa Clara Railroad. They still cite to it for this proposition. But it was introduced into the law through a court reporter's notes without any analysis of 100 years of prior rulings where the court had said that, yes, there are protections for corporations, but corporations are very different from individuals, and they can and should be treated differently and subject to greater regulations because of their special privileges and special characteristics. And so what it, it's been called the capitalist joker, this idea that corporations are persons was kind of introduced in this very strange way into our law. And it's nobody's ever really taken it. The court has very rarely taken it truly seriously. In other words, they've always treated, except for a few random cases, including this one, they've always treated corporations as protected by the Constitution but subject to special rules.
Well, all Supreme Court rulings seem to reflect the times that they're made in, and this ruling in 1886 was at a time when the railroads were consolidating all of their power. It kind of fits into the time period that it was written in, doesn't it?
I think it does, and I think what's remarkable, too, is that you can trace the ruling in Citizens United pretty directly back to a memo that then that Lewis Powell, who was at that point a lawyer and working for or writing a memo for the Chamber of Commerce in 1971. He wrote a memo which said to the Chamber of Commerce, you need to take advantage of this unique opportunity in the courts to have an influence. And he was put on the court the next year, or that same year, and 7 years later he wrote an opinion in a case called Bellotti versus Bank of Boston, which was heavily relied upon by the Citizens United majority. And in Bellotti, in a different context, in the context of a ballot initiative, the court said that you couldn't limit, or it was difficult to limit, corporate speech. And that's really the genesis of the Citizens United opinion, is the opinion written in a 5-4 case by Justice Powell shortly after telling, kind of setting off the rise of the conservative legal movement by writing this memo and getting the chamber to take more seriously appointments to the court and arguments made before the court.
Richard, another important case is Lochner versus New York. How does that apply?
Probably not directly. Obviously, Lochner is a very famous case of about 100 years ago in which the Supreme Court struck down regulations, sort of workplace regulations, maximum hours and workplace condition regulations designed to improve the situation of bakers on the theory that it interfered with the freedom of contract. Many Lochner has been frequently disavowed since then, and the courts now generally uphold government economic regulation. But it's consistent with Lochner, I think, in the sense of the court seeing in the Constitution, maybe more than is there, the court seeing in the Constitution a more specific blueprint or guidelines for public policy. Just as the court, the turn of the last century court saw in Lochner a blueprint for how economic relations are to be run, which is to say, unregulated by any government. This court sees in the First Amendment more of a blueprint for how the political process is to be run, how elections are to be run, with much less regulation designed to curb the role of money than many policymakers would like. And they're basically setting themselves up as the policymaker. Since the court changed in 2005 with the departure of Justice O'Connor and her replacement by Justice Alito, the court has now handed down four major campaign finance rulings. In each of those rulings, either a campaign finance restriction was knocked down or eviscerated, and the one which was eviscerated in 2007 was just knocked down in Citizens United. And each of those have been by either a 6-3 or a 5-4 vote. And the current court really sees itself as not deferential to the political process in thinking about the campaign regulation process, but it's the arbiter.
Although it's interesting that on Tuesday, Justice Clarence Thomas spoke to a law school in Florida and defended the decision by invoking the Tillman Act of 1907. He said, go back and read why Senator Benjamin Tillman introduced that legislation. He was from South Carolina, and right. As I hear the story, he was concerned that the corporations, Republican corporations, were favorable toward blacks, and he felt that there was a need to regulate them.
Well, that's kind of a warped view of history, although it is true that Pitchfork Ben Tillman was, in fact, a notorious racist, as well as a Southern populist supporting this. But an even earlier supporter of this law was actually a Republican senator from New Hampshire, who also got the ball rolling. And, of course, a very prominent supporter of the law was President Theodore Roosevelt. So it is true. Sometimes you have odd coalitions that get together to make a law, and it's true that the ban on corporate contributions is named after Tillman of South Carolina, but it was not just Southern racists.
I have to leave it there, unfortunately. Thank you both so much for talking with us. Richard Brefault, professor at Columbia University, Doug Kendall, the president and founder of the Constitutional Accountability Center.